Group 93 WMPZ, good morning and welcome to Caring for the Community, brought to you by Blue Cross Blue Shield of Tennessee. This morning, we'll discuss food allergies. Now, you probably noticed more restaurants posting signs about food allergies. You may have received information about policies at your child's school. According to the National Institutes for Health, says that food allergies affect about 1 in 20 children and 1 in 25 adults in the U.S. I'm joined this morning by Dr. Lee Perry, who's a return guest for us, an asthma and allergy specialist with Chattanooga Allergy Clinic. How are you this morning?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
And welcome back.
Thank you.
All right. So this morning, we're going to talk about food allergies. So what happens when someone eats a food that they're allergic to?
Yeah. So allergies to foods usually cause immediate symptoms. That's what we're looking for. So if somebody eats a food that they're allergic to, usually within a few minutes, sometimes an hour. There are some exceptions to this, but most of the time it's usually immediately. They develop itchy skin, itchy throat, swollen lips. It can be as severe as having swollen tongue or throat, shortness of breath, and even nausea and vomiting, and those types of symptoms and diarrhea and things like that. It can be really any body system can be involved. So in a food allergy, you have to look for any of those symptoms.
So are food allergies the same as food sensitivities? What's the difference between those two?
Yeah, that's important because food allergies, it's really important to identify an allergy. Sometimes a food allergy or oftentimes can be life-threatening, whereas food sensitivities are not. So food allergy reactions are the ones I just described that are immediate and really impactful as far as how they look. My oldest son has peanut allergies. So if he eats a peanut butter sandwich, which I wouldn't make him do, but if he were to eat a peanut butter sandwich, within about 5 minutes, he would be having hives all over the body, itchy throat, difficulty breathing. He'd be vomiting, that kind
so
of
that'd
thing.
That'd be a more
and
serious.
And that's called anaphylaxis, which is a life-threatening reaction, whereas a food sensitivity is where usually you just have a difficult time digesting the food. A classic example would be lactose intolerance. Mm-hmm. A lot of people that are listening probably notice when they drink too much milk or have too much ice cream that they get bloating or gas or constipation.
Right.
That's usually hours later or days later even, as opposed to minutes later. And so those types of insensitivities and things like that are not really life-threatening.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. They can still have some of those things, but it's not necessarily life-threatening, but you're going to have some kind of reaction to it.
That's right. And lactose intolerance, most patients with that type of intolerance know they can tolerate maybe a bowl of cereal with some milk on it, but if they overdo it, they're going to have lots of symptoms later.
Absolutely. So what foods can cause an allergic reaction, and what are the most common food allergies? Because when we hear about peanut allergies, so what are some of those, what's the causes in some of those most common foods?
So going back to the first question, what causes a food allergy? One of the things is genetics. So you have to really look into who your parents are, who your uncles and aunts are. If there's a strong family history of food allergy, we want to at least look at that, especially if there's a brother or sister with a food allergy. As far as what foods can cause an allergic reaction, really any food can. I've seen really some weird, strange food reactions to things like lima beans and paprika. I mean, just spices can cause allergic reactions. Those are very, very rare allergens. The most common food allergens, to answer your second question, are things like milk, soy, wheat, egg, nuts, peanuts and tree nuts, and seafood. Those are the biggest ones, and there's things like rice and corn and things like that can cause allergies. You can have an allergy reaction to fruits and vegetables and meats, and we'll talk about some of those. But the most common ones are the ones I mentioned earlier, soy, wheat, egg, nuts, milk, and seafood.
So are food allergies something that a person is born with, or can you develop those later in life? Because somebody might get to the point where, like, I was able to eat this my whole life, but now I'm having issues with it.
That's exactly right. And allergies can start at any age. And a lot of times, most commonly, allergies are worse during the pediatric age group. They're more common in kids less than 12. But I have seen, literally, like you just said, I've seen patients who've tolerated peanut butter or shrimp their entire life, and all of a sudden when they're 52, they have a reaction to shrimp.
Oh, wow.
And so you can develop an allergy really at any age, but more commonly we see it in the pediatric age group when our patients are a little bit younger.
Okay. So we seem to be hearing more in recent years about food allergies. We hear a lot in the news about the peanut allergies and gluten. Hear a lot about that word.
Yes.
Are food allergies on the rise? And if so, why are we seeing more of this? Where is that coming from?
Well, the first part of the question, definitely. It's definitely on the rise. and that's just in an anecdotal way. If you asked any of your friends, or if I asked my parents' generation, I'm 40, so my parents are 60 to 70. Mm-hmm. If I asked their generation, how many kids did you know with peanut allergy when you were a kid or when you were a teenager? Most people will tell you none.
Right.
Like, and so nowadays, there's kids in every school with peanut allergy, and I have it in my own home. Mm-hmm. So clearly it's on the rise. We know that for sure it's on the rise. And so the question is why. There's a lot of speculation as to why that might be the case. The only thing we know for sure is that when a few years ago the American Academy of Pediatrics recommended a certain strictness to how we introduced foods, like, for instance, peanut. We weren't supposed to introduce peanuts or peanut butter until the age of 2 to 3.
Okay.
Seafood, no seafood until age 3. No mm-hmm. eggs until age 2. And with those recommendations, that's over a decade ago, with those recommendations, we saw that the food allergies to those specific foods actually went up.
Oh, wow.
Whereas in countries like, there's a country like Israel, for instance, they give their kids, when they're really young babies, this little food snack called Bamba that contains peanut protein.
Uh-huh.
They give it to them when they're like 4 or 5 months of age. It's like a Cheerio with peanut in it.
Okay.
And if you look at their country, there's this almost zero peanut allergy.
Oh, wow.
And so we think, and we kind of know that if we can introduce the peanut earlier as opposed to after 3 or any other food, the earlier we get it introduced into the body, the better. So okay. The recommendations the American Academy of Pediatrics used to make about delaying those food introductions,
right.
Now we tell parents to go ahead and give them earlier because we think if you can get it to them earlier, they can develop tolerance to the food and prevent the allergy. That's one factor that we know of. The other factors we don't know. There's got to be some other reason for it. We don't know if it's something with the way the American diet is or some of the foods we eat, some of the tendencies we have. There's no way to know. We haven't really figured that out, but we can tell you they're definitely on the rise, and the earlier we can get those foods into the diet, the better.
So how do we know if we're allergic to food? How do you know if you're allergic to something?
Yeah.
What are some of the symptoms that you might see?
Yeah, so we mentioned earlier usually food allergy patients kind of know because they've had a reaction to a food. They don't usually come in wondering if they're allergic to food. They kind of have a suspicion. I think I'm allergic to nuts, and here's why. Usually after you eat a food you're allergic to, the first thing we usually see is itching somewhere, usually the throat or somewhere in the body, or maybe a rash. And if the rash progresses, it might be a full body breakout with hives all over the place. You might also see shortness of breath and wheezing, or chest tightness and cough, and then also gastrointestinal symptoms like vomiting and diarrhea.
Okay.
And those symptoms are usually right away. So if you try a new food on Monday and you start having difficulty with you're going to the bathroom on Tuesday, it's probably not an allergy. It's probably something else. But if it happens right away, that's when we get concerned about food allergy.
Okay, and that's what I was going to ask you, if these symptoms always show up immediately. Is it always that way, or can it sometimes show up later?
There's a couple of exceptions. The biggest exception is this new allergy that we've identified over the last 7 or 8 years called alpha-gal allergy. Alpha-gal is a sugar that you can find in beef and in pork and in other mammalian meats like lamb and venison. It's not found in poultry like turkey or chicken. It's not found in fish. Only in beef, pork, lamb, and other mammalian meats. And it only occurs in people who've been bitten by a certain tick called the Lone Star tick. So this allergy was discovered in Virginia about a decade ago, and I have probably 50 patients here in Chattanooga with this, and my partners each probably have 50 patients. So in our practice, we probably have well over 200 or 300 patients with alpha-gal allergy. This is a unique allergy in that it doesn't present right away. You don't have symptoms right away. So the classic story is a person eats a hamburger at dinner time, maybe 6 or 7 for dinner, and they wake up at 2 or 3 in the morning, 7, 8 hours later sometimes, with full body hives, swelling of the lips, vomiting, the same symptoms, but they occur, instead of immediately, they occur 7 or 8 hours later.
Oh, wow.
And so in those patients, it's really important to kind of know that possibility exists if you've been bitten by a tick. And there's a good test for it. It's a blood test. It's very simple to do, and it can tell us if you have that type of allergy.
Okay. And some of those are rather severe and probably require immediate treatment, right? So would someone need to probably go to the hospital on some of those if they have some of those symptoms?
Yes, absolutely. And with food allergies, the main thing is, number one, we've got to identify, it's really important to identify those patients who have the allergy so we can figure out what their food allergy is. Once we figure out what food allergy they have, we can teach them about avoiding it and how to treat it. But absolutely, if the symptoms are severe enough, if you're developing difficulty breathing, GI symptoms, swollen lips, and those kinds of things, you really should go to the emergency room. And most patients with food allergies should carry an epinephrine auto-injector, which is basically a life-saving dose of adrenaline or epinephrine.
Is that what they call the EpiPen?
EpiPen is one brand of that where you can use it and you basically inject it into your lateral thigh, and the big muscle in your leg. And it's a life-saving treatment that everybody with food allergies should have one of those available.
Okay. And for some of the symptoms, there are other conditions that cause these same symptoms. So how do you know when it's allergies and not something else?
Mm-hmm. Well, a lot of it has to do with just the testing. So whenever somebody comes into our office with those types of symptoms, mm-hmm. it's really important for the physician, the allergist, to sit down and listen to the patient. I mean, you guys have stories for us that you need to tell us, and we need to listen to what those stories are and exactly what happened. How did it happen? How soon after eating the food did it happen? Was it 2 days? Probably not an allergy. Was it 30 minutes? Probably an allergy.
Mm-hmm.
And then we use that information to kind of direct us on our skin testing protocols. And when we test for allergy, there's basically a couple different ways. Skin testing is one way, and then also blood testing. And we try to tease that out mainly by checking the history first, trying to figure out how concerned we are about a food allergy, and then guiding our testing appropriately.
So if you have some of these symptoms we talked about a few minutes ago, do you go to your primary care doctor first, or you go to an allergist?
Yeah. So either way, really, I think it's important if you're really concerned about food allergy, your primary care doctor most likely here in town will know to send you to us, to the allergist. But it's certainly okay. It's appropriate to call us and get an appointment if you're concerned about a food allergy. That's an appropriate way of handling it, because in most cases, the primary doctors are going to want to send you on to us for testing anyway.
So we mentioned the allergic reactions. So will you always have the same? Well, we mentioned that people know. Mm-hmm. Like if you know that you have these allergies, you know what's going to happen if you have some of these foods. So will you always have that same allergic reaction to a food, or can it vary? And does the reaction depend on the amount of food that you consume? Because some people may think, maybe if I just have a little bit, it won't hurt.
Right.
You know, so.
That's a great question.
Are you going to have the same reaction?
Well, it can vary. It really can. It can be different from time to time. And that's one of the strange things about food allergies. Sometimes you can get away with it, but we don't recommend that at all in our patients, to try to get a quote-unquote get away with an exposure.
Don't even try it.
Even for a peanut allergy, for instance, even a smidge, a small amount of peanut protein can cause a life-threatening reaction.
Oh, wow.
We do think that the more you get of a certain protein, the more likely you're going to have a more severe reaction. So that's true. So it is dependent upon the amount, but in many cases, even a small amount, or a kiddo eats a small bite of ice cream with Butterfinger in it, can cause a severe reaction.
And isn't it true that if some people even touch it, some things that they're allergic to, they could, without even consuming it, still have that reaction?
That's exactly right. Peanuts are one, and certain shellfish can sometimes do that, and I've seen that with eggs. There are some concerns out there, like what if you get in a room with somebody eating peanut, can you inhale the peanut fumes, so to speak, and cause trouble, or the food fumes? And it's possible. There aren't many real solid case reports of somebody smelling peanut and having anaphylaxis or an allergic reaction, but it is potentially possible depending on the severity. And sometimes it depends on how the food is prepared. Like, for instance, peanuts, when they're boiled, they're not as allergenic as if they're roasted. Which is interesting. If they're roasted, they're highly allergenic.
Oh, wow.
When they're boiled, they're not quite as allergenic. I'm not telling people with peanut allergies to eat boiled peanuts, but there's lots of different variations. And egg and milk are an example of food allergies that if you have an allergy to egg, about 70% of people with egg allergy can eat egg if it's baked into another food as a minor ingredient. So if you take somebody with egg allergy, they eat a scrambled egg or something with raw egg, they're going to have symptoms every time.
But if
you use one egg and a batch of pancakes, and you bake and you cook the pancakes on the griddle or on the stove, a lot of the times those patients with egg allergy can tolerate that pancake. It's because when you cook the egg, the protein in the egg changes, and so now it's not as allergenic as it was before.
Okay, so that's what we were talking about, being concerned about what others around you are eating. Because I know once we went to one of those Japanese steakhouses, and one of my friends is allergic to shellfish, and they order chicken, but they cook it on the same grill
right.
as the shellfish, and they ended up having to go to the hospital. So that is a little concern, right, to be, you know,
yes.
around what other people are eating. And you were saying, like, don't touch anything mm-hmm. or, you know, should they be concerned about that?
Yeah, in those situations, you know, when somebody has seafood allergy, they really have to be cautious. If you go into Red Lobster or one of those Japanese steakhouses
yeah.
and they're cooking shellfish everywhere, and
uh-huh.
and you're, even though you're not eating the shellfish, there's cross-contamination
exactly.
possible. And we see that a lot. And also we see lots of concerns. We fill out lots of paperwork at the beginning of the school year for kids who are going back to school with certain food allergies.
Mm-hmm.
And how do we handle that in the cafeteria with
oh,
other
wow.
kids who are eating peanuts or tree nuts or whatever the food is?
Yeah.
And so it's difficult.
Share your food with other kids because you don't know what's in there.
That's right. And it's really difficult to answer those questions about, you know, can we eat this? Can we let this kid eat at the same table
mm-hmm.
with a kiddo who's eaten this certain food? Those are really difficult things, and usually we just have to be as cautious as we can
mm-hmm.
as long as it's practical. Sometimes we don't want little kids walking around living in bubbles,
right?
But if there's practical ways of protecting them, making sure like the school nurses and the school teacher and the principal, whoever, the school nurse, whoever else is, the cafeteria workers are aware of this certain
mm-hmm.
child's food allergy, that's always a good idea.
Absolutely. So how do we test for these food allergies?
So there's three tests that you can do for a food allergy. Number one is skin testing.
Mm-hmm.
It's the easiest one to do. It takes us about 10 or 15 minutes, and we usually know the answer. It's where we take a little plastic pin, and we just scratch the skin
right.
with the allergens.
Is that where they have all the different little things on your arm?
That's
and
right.
The little dots to see what
exactly.
You know,
and
what
if you're allergic,
you respond to.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and if you're allergic to a food, usually you would have where we scratch the skin, you would have a welt form
exactly.
in that area. And so that takes about 15 minutes. It doesn't hurt. It's painless. It only thing it does is itch.
Okay.
The second way to treat or to test for food allergies is blood testing.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little more invasive. It's not a finger prick or anything like that. It's an actual stick in the arm or a blood draw through the vein.
Okay.
And it's a little more painful, but it's also very accurate, and it does work. It's a good test, good information. It does take us a little bit longer to get the answer, usually about a week.
Mm-hmm.
And then the most important test, of course, is not the skin test or the blood test. While those are good tests, the best test is what happens when you eat the food.
Oh, wow.
So if you come in and let's say you have a reaction to a food every time you eat it, and we do a skin test or a blood test, and the test is normal, I'm going to usually tell you to trust your body,
mm-hmm.
you know, to trust your history. If you every time you eat eggs, it causes you to have hives, and my test to egg is normal,
uh-huh.
I'm usually going to tell you to avoid egg because your history tells me that you can't tolerate it.
Absolutely.
And I have a lot of patients that come in and they are eating peanut butter every day, like sandwiches every day or two
mm-hmm.
or three times a week, and they have a slightly positive test to peanut. And those patients, we tell them to keep eating the peanut. The positive test doesn't mean you're not allergic, that you're allergic as long as you're eating it. So it's a combination of those three things, really, that's important to do. But if somebody has a history of a reaction to a food, then the first thing I would usually do is a skin test. And if there's any doubt, I might do a blood test too.
Okay. Well, can you outgrow food allergies?
Mm-hmm.
Is there, you know, hope that maybe one day you will no longer be allergic to peanuts or what have you? Can you outgrow an allergy?
Yes, you sure can. We mentioned the top six food allergens earlier. So of those, the ones that are like if you have a kiddo with peanut or tree nut or shellfish allergies, those are less likely to get outgrown. Only about 10 to 15% of kids will outgrow those allergies. And if you're diagnosed with a peanut, tree nut, or shellfish allergy as an adult, you're probably not going to get rid of it, okay? Whereas soy and milk and wheat and egg,
mm-hmm.
those are 50 to 70%, depending on which study you look at, 50 to 70% of kids will outgrow those by the age of 5 or 6. So those are kids, especially in that pediatric age group, when we diagnose a food allergy at the age of 1 or 2, we really want to follow those kids really closely for the next few years because we can often identify food allergens that they're outgrowing. But once you become adult, it's really difficult. Now, that one I mentioned earlier about the alpha gal, the one
okay.
with the beef
uh-huh.
and pork, that one is outgrown in adults and children. And so what we do with that is once we diagnose it, we check that same blood test to alpha gal every year. And we just monitor it. Once it gets to a level that we're comfortable with, we have the patient come in and eat 3 sausage patties
oh, wow.
in our office. Because I told you the best test is what happens when you eat it.
Right, exactly.
So even if the blood test is normal, we still want you to eat the sausage with us the first time. So,
mm-hmm.
and we also do a lot of those oral challenges to foods. Let's say we think a kiddo has outgrown an allergy to peanut or peanut butter, we'll have them come into the office and eat some peanut butter with us the first time. We don't want them eating peanut butter for the first time in years at home.
Right.
We'd rather them do that with
us. Because if they have a reaction, they're going to need to be somewhere where they can get treated.
Exactly right.
You know?
Exactly
okay.
right.
So that brings me to the next question. How are food allergies treated? Like,
yes.
what do you do?
So the first thing is you got to identify it, right? And then the second is avoidance. That's the it's not a really the long story or the long story short is there's not a good treatment yet.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to avoid the foods we're allergic to. Everybody with a food allergy should have an EpiPen or something like an EpiPen. There's some alternatives we can discuss. Basically you avoid the food, and if you're accidentally exposed to the food and you're having severe symptoms, you have to treat with the epinephrine. But avoidance is the most important thing. It's really important because kiddos and adults with, like, say, milk allergy, you're looking on the ingredient label that the FDA warrants or makes people, the manufacturers of food, they have to label if a food has milk or soy or wheat or egg or nuts. And you read the label and there's no milk on there. It just says no milk. But then it might say artificial flavors.
Mm-hmm.
And artificial flavors in some cases is code for milk.
Oh, wow.
So you have to be really careful with reading labels, and we can help people identify where the pitfalls might be. But once you get good at avoiding it, and if you have accidental exposures, it's EpiPens. A lot of people ask us about allergy shots for food allergy. That was looked at many, many years ago, and it actually worked, believe it or not. It was really effective or fairly effective at helping people with their food allergy. The downside was, contrary to regular allergy shots for things like pollen, which almost never cause bad allergic reactions, food allergy shots were causing too many allergic reactions.
Oh, wow.
So the governing bodies of allergists have basically said it's not a good idea to do allergy shots for foods.
So you don't give those anymore.
That's right. We don't do food allergy shots.
Those.
There are some pretty cool potential treatments on the horizon where people are studying not really a shot, but more of a patch. There's a patch that one's called Viaskin. It can be used for peanut allergy, where there's peanut allergen infused into this basically a sticker that you put on your body, and you replace it every so often. And it seems to be well tolerated, and it looks like it's working well. It's not FDA approved yet, but probably in the next couple of years we'll have some options. And there's also something called OIT, which stands for oral immunotherapy, where we have people come into the office and eat small amounts of whatever food they're allergic to, and they slowly build up the dose that they eat until they can tolerate, let's say, a handful of peanuts a day or a little bit of pecan each day. And they eat it every day to maintain their desensitized, non-allergic state.
Right.
So that's a dangerous, potentially dangerous protocol. It's not FDA approved yet. We're not doing it in the office yet, but there are academic centers like at Duke and in Texas and in Cincinnati who are doing what's called oral immunotherapy, where they're doing that by mouth to try to take away the allergy. It looks to be very effective, but obviously there's going to be a lot of potential risk for having allergic reactions. So we want to be really careful to do that when the time is right.
Okay. So we talked about the EpiPens, and many people carry those. So those are pretty much used for in emergency situations, right?
Yes.
How do they work as far as stopping that allergic reaction? And we talked about a couple of alternatives. Were those pretty much all of them with the patch and the things that you just mentioned a few minutes ago?
Yeah. So for EpiPens and epinephrine, the way it works is it's given in a big muscle, and it immediately goes into the bloodstream. And it's absorbed really quickly because it's a big muscle that you're giving it in. And what it does is it makes your heart race, and it tightens up the blood vessels all around the body so that it makes your blood pressure go up a little bit, which we actually want to happen in an allergic reaction.
Mm-hmm.
And so what it does is it helps the blood to kind of perfuse throughout your body. And if you have a real bad allergic reaction to a food and you don't have epinephrine, your blood pressure can drop, and that's when it becomes life-threatening. So epinephrine is all about reversing that allergic reaction.
Okay.
So the ways you can find epinephrine, there's EpiPens, which is the most famous, and then there's generic EpiPens, which is the same thing as an EpiPen, but it's generic epinephrine.
Okay, I was going to say, does that work just as well?
Same thing,
okay.
Exactly right. There's also a generic EpiPen or epinephrine auto-injector and that you can get, and there's also one called AuviQ, which is shaped kind of like a cell phone, like almost like a rectangle. And it's good. Right now, it's a good medicine. We can get it for some patients. We can get it for free if they have commercial insurance. But it's really easy to put in your pocket. It actually gives you verbal instruction. Whenever you open it up, it tells you how to do it.
Okay.
So a lot of people like that. It was also the medicine that years ago was on the market and was taken off the market because it wasn't administering enough epinephrine.
Okay.
So they've hopefully fixed that.
Fixed it
it's available again.
Okay.
That's right. So we have five or six options. And what we do as allergists at Chattanooga Allergy Clinic, we really look at the patient's insurance and we try to figure out which one makes the most sense for them.
Absolutely.
And we make sure they get it. Whatever we have to do to get it for them, we get it for them.
Okay. And is there anything else we should know about this treatment? Because, of course, people should always check their expiration dates frequently, because if it's out of date, I'm assuming that it's probably not going to work properly like it's supposed to.
That's right. When you go to a pharmacy, you really should look at the expiration date. I've had a couple of patients that picked up a new epinephrine auto-injector at the pharmacy, and they gave them one with an expiration date that was like 3 months away.
Oh, boy.
And so that's not intentional by the pharmacist. It was happened. And so if you get one, then you got to go back 3 months later and get a new one. So it's really important. When you get it, just open it up, make sure the expiration date is satisfactory. But it does expire usually after about a year.
Okay, I was going to ask
long
did it usually last?
Well, the expiration date's for a year. There was actually a study recently where they looked at expired epinephrine to see if it was still good.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like it could be good still for a few years after that expiration date.
Okay.
So I'd tell people never to throw them away unless there's a little window in a little box on the epinephrine auto-injector where you can look for a color change in the fluid. If you've left it in the heat or in your car and it gets real hot, the fluid color will change and you need to throw that away.
Okay.
But if it's still the same color, even if it's a year expired, I wouldn't throw it away. It's better than nothing. Right? So we would still want a non-expired epinephrine for your main use, but you may be able to keep some of those expired ones around too.
Okay. So here's another question. Is there a link between food allergies and other allergies that people may have?
Yeah, there's a strong link. And there's something called the atopic march. So whenever kids are little, whenever we're little, the first sign of allergy is usually eczema, which is a skin condition, kind of an itchy red skin condition, usually on the arms, at the elbows, and behind the knees. It could be anywhere, but those are the most common areas. And kids with eczema are more likely to have a food allergy. And if you develop a food allergy, as your eczema gets better, as you get older, a lot of times that gives way to other allergic conditions. So I always caution my parents, be careful not to get too lax whenever their eczema goes away, to pay really close attention, because other things can start developing, like seasonal allergies and asthma even. And so oftentimes the very first sign of allergy in an infant is eczema and food allergy. And then later in life we can start seeing things like asthma, seasonal allergies, hay fever, those kinds of things.
Okay. Okay. So a lot of the restaurants post information about ingredients now in their foods, especially related to nuts. We see this so much now. Should we still ask more questions? I mean, we see it on the menu, you know, but should we still ask? I mean, if someone knows that they have an allergy, and especially if it's one of the more serious ones, should they always still ask?
Yeah, I think they should. I think you should mention it just to your waiter or the person preparing the food, because we always, like we mentioned earlier with the steakhouses, we're worried about cross-contamination, accidental exposures. And so it might make the chef and the waiting staff and the people at the restaurant more mindful of how they prepare your food. And so we don't want any of those cross-contamination things happening, and those accidents happen quite frequently.
Oh, yeah, all the time they'll bring you the wrong orders, like I asked for it with the no nuts.
Right.
You know, and I mean, I don't have a nut allergy, but, you know, I got a particular restaurant. I just prefer not to have the nuts on that particular dish.
Right.
And, you know, they asked me, I think, once if I was allergic, and I said no. But so now, like, every now and then they'll still put them on there. So, I mean, if I were allergic, that could be a really big problem. So I guess you should always, always ask. So
yes.
I want to ask about a couple of fruits. Like if people eat melons or apples and they have itching in their mouth after that, why is that? Is that something to be concerned about?
Yeah, we see it literally every day in this part of the country, because in this part of the country the most common allergy, as you know, is pollen. Pollen allergy. And people that have really bad allergies to things like ragweed will oftentimes have difficult times eating melons and bananas and certain raw fruits. And then if you have really bad allergy to tree pollen, You might have difficulty eating raw carrots, apples, peaches, plums, celery,
wow.
which is kind of strange. But what happens is, the reason for that is, if you look at the pollen under the microscope and look at kind of its basic structure,
mm-hmm.
it's very similar to the structure of the allergen in the food, in those raw fruits.
Okay.
So like a kiddo who has, or an adult even, who has real bad tree pollen allergy, when they eat a raw apple, it makes their mouth itch. They can eat that same food, apple, cooked in like applesauce or apple juice.
Okay.
Because when you cook the food, again, like the egg earlier, when you mm-hmm. cook the food, it changes the protein, it changes the allergen. And so now it takes away that allergy. So
oh, wow.
that's called oral allergy syndrome
mm-hmm.
or pollen food allergy syndrome.
Yeah.
And it's just because that you're so allergic to pollen. So in patients like that, the main thing you should be really worried about is your allergies, not necessarily the food.
Right.
But those are people that should come in and get allergy tested for pollens, because
right.
we can get rid of their pollen allergy with allergy shots.
Okay. And that's got to be hard. And with, you know, what the nutrition is telling us, eat more fruits and vegetables.
That's
and
right.
And then there you are having this allergy. Is that it just makes it hard. So is there anything else that you'd like for our listeners to know about this, or any resources to get more information? You're over at the Chattanooga Allergy Clinic. They, you
yeah.
know, if they've been having any issues, I'm sure they can come over and get tested and see if they have an allergic reaction to something, or if they have an allergy, they can come and, you know, see what it is and get treated for it. So
yes.
is there anything else you'd like for our listeners to know?
Yeah, I think it's just really important to not be in doubt, you know, not have, there's no reason to not know. We can, there's really good and easy ways we can figure out if you're allergic to a food. So if you really suspect a food allergy, it's very simple for us to kind of sit down with you and really give you some clarity. And if you do have that food allergy, we want to make sure you're protected. So it's really important to sit down with a board-certified allergist. And like you said, I work at Chattanooga Allergy Clinic. We have
mm-hmm.
8 offices all over this part of the area. You look us up on ChattanoogaAllergyClinic.com,
okay.
or you can call us at 899-0431, and we'll be glad to see you.
Okay, and most people's insurance is paid for.
We cover.
Something
we take.
Like this?
We take every insurance, and generally speaking, almost every insurance plan is covered well for allergy testing and treatment.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much. We've been enlightened today on quite a few things. So thank you so much for coming back again and telling us, you know, talking to us about food allergies. Learned a little something new today. So thank you so
much. You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
All right. That is Dr. Lee Perry once again from the Chattanooga Allergy Clinic. And we've been discussing food allergies. Keep it right here. You're listening to Caring for the Community, brought to you by Blue Cross, Blue Shield of Tennessee, and Groove 93.